Welcome to Rob and Tony's Cinematic Adventure. I'm Rob Wilson.
And I'm Tony the Quarto.
So this movie, we are doing the 2022 Oscar winner for Best Picture. It also won Best Adapted Screenplay and Best Supporting Actor. But the movie is CODA, which stands for Child of Deaf Adults. And Tony, this was your first time seeing it, wasn't it?
My first viewing, yes. Which, you know, it's interesting because normally I'm very much into like the Oscar season or the awards season and see a lot of the movies prior to the awards. And being that it was on actually released like in August in terms of being for the general public, but also being on a streaming platform should have been a little bit easier for me, but it wasn't. So yeah, this is my first time going into it. And this is what our second Best Picture winner because we did everything. No, I guess third.
We did Gladiator also.
Gladiator, that's right, yeah. So, and Everything Everywhere All at Once.
But this is our second Best Picture winner that at least one of us hadn't seen before we did the podcast.
That's right. So, I was excited going into it because I am kind of a completist and want to see all the Best Picture winners possible. I actually have a little bit of a gap because just life has gotten in the way the last 10 years or so and haven't been able to get out to see all the movies that I previously wanted. So, there's still others like Moonlight and Shape of Water and Green Book that I still haven't seen. CODA was one of them, but I've seen it now. And I thought it was very good. I thought it was a worthy winner, to be honest. So I know it was well received overall. There's always going to be some people that are going to not like it, obviously. And I know some people, you know, like to kind of hate all the stuff that becomes popular. But I thought it was very good. And because I remember when it first came out, even before the, you know, Oscar season or its release, was at Sundance Film Festival. Right. So which is actually just starting as we are recording this. And I was hit there. And I think it won anything at Sundance. I'm trying to remember if it won any of the awards. But yes, it won the dramatic competition, the grand jury and the audience dramatic award at Sundance. So it was already on a lot of radars. And then Apple TV picked it up. So also our first streaming platform movie that we featured.
Yeah. So.
Did you catch it before it won the Oscar or after?
I caught it after. I first saw it. So this viewing was my second full, like, complete viewing of it. Okay. But early August of 22 was when I saw it. No, wait. Yes. Early August 22.
Of 21, so, right?
No, I saw it. No, it came out in 21. I saw it in 22 after it had won the Oscar.
It would have been after this ceremony. Yeah. You're right.
I saw it after it had won the Oscar. But a couple of friends of mine actually invited me to. So every once in a while during the summer, their church will have movie nights, like movie services, where they show clips for like each week is a different movie. They'll show clips from the movie and then sort of talk about, you know, those clips and how it works into scripture and stuff like that and the teaching for that day. So they invited me to go to it and they never announced what movie it was before the service. Okay. So I got there and it was CODA. So, you know, they're just playing some of the main scenes from it. And, you know, from what I saw there, like that, I want to finish this movie, you know?
Okay.
I just invested enough in the movie to want to see the rest of it. So maybe a week or so later, maybe not even that long, I got onto Apple TV Plus and I watched it. And so I absolutely loved this movie. Okay. I loved it. In fact, I will go on record saying that it is the best movie I've seen in years. And I will tell you why. All right. So, I mean, granted, part of how the movie hit me might have had a little bit to do with what was going on in my life at the time, because, I mean, this was when, so my dog Chewy, just before he was diagnosed with lymphoma, you know, he was showing all the symptoms of it and everything, was when I saw the movie.
Right.
So I was dealing with him, and then he ended up passing away the following October. So, I mean, I had the emotions going on from that, but, so, there are two, maybe three particular scenes in this movie that, so I'm not one, I've never really been one to cry at movies for the most part, right? I mean, yeah, every once in a while there's a scene or something that, you know, a single tear will roll down my cheek or something, right? But there are a couple parts of this movie, and we'll get to them when we get to into the discussion,
right?
That just hit me.
Okay.
You know, they just really hit me like a freight train, and I connected with this movie.
Yeah,
you know.
No,
and in my mind, any movie that can bring up that sort of emotion in you,
right,
is a damn good movie.
Yeah, I completely agree.
You know, I mean, no matter what else might be going on in the background in your life, if there's a movie that, that you can really connect with that can really have that effect on you, then it's a good movie. And this is really the first movie that I've seen that has had that sort of, like, just hit me like that.
All right.
In the thousands of movies that I've seen in my life.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, the probably hundreds of movies I've seen in the last few years. But yeah, it's definitely, it is the best movie I've seen in a long time.
I think movies,
and it was very, very worthy of the Oscar.
Movies should be able to transport us. They can transport us in any number of ways, right? In some ways, they can just be kind of a relief just from, you know, the difficulties of the world, right? And that can be done in different ways. It could be something that's emotionally cathartic, as you were just describing. And sometimes it could just be a comedy that just takes us someplace else, right? Or it could be an action adventure, right? Where you get to pretend that you're all in some adventure. And, you know, we've talked about how like Spielberg and Lucas, how they wanted to make Indiana Jones and Star Wars, and all these characters to be like these serials that they grew up watching, right? To transport you. And I think, you know, movies have that magic, and it can be done in any number of ways. And something that's dramatic that can move you like that is one of the ways. And Coda definitely accomplishes that, in my opinion. Even though it's, you know, it has around it, you know, your basic coming of age story.
Yeah.
Right. You kind of have your family drama, right? There's difficulties and other obstacles. And that's all fine. But, you know, you have characters that you connect with, right?
Yeah.
And then that's what matters. Like, you know, the characters are real enough that you get pulled into it. And the thing I liked overall about it is that we have these family kind of struggles and arguments, right, that were real, right? Sometimes I think certain movies, you know, they can either make things too perfect within a family, mm-hmm. right? Or it's just really dysfunctional.
Yeah, this is like really unrealistically, right? Dysfunctional. Like,
no, but the thing is, like, every family is messy in some ways, yes. Right?
And by the
we
way,
we all have arguments within families.
By the way, especially since this is a more recent movie, spoiler alert, we're going to be talking about every bit of this movie, beginning, middle, and end. If you have not seen the movie and you don't want to be spoiled, pause the podcast, watch the movie, come back and listen. If you have, or if you have seen the movie or you don't mind being spoiled, then keep on listening.
And it is, you know, maybe a little predictable, but it's about how it gets there that matters, right?
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, this kind of movie, you know, sort of coming of age story, especially like revolving around high school choir.
Yeah.
Right. It's never really been like the first movie I'm going to go and watch. Right. It's
right.
You know, it's usually not my first choice in, you know, what I'm going to watch on a Friday night. But then seeing it, you know, it's different than every other movie of this style that I've ever seen.
Right.
It's one that definitely, if you have not seen it, please do yourself a favor and check it out.
And what I didn't realize is that it is a remake of a French film.
Yes. Yes, it is.
La Vieille Belier.
Yes.
I hope I'm saying that right. Which actually was like the, 2014. And it was the number two movie that year at the French box office.
Yeah.
So it was a very big hit in France.
Yeah, which also explains why France is the only place where it got a physical release.
Yes.
Like on DVD.
And one of the producers.
There was a 4K Blu-ray release in France, but nowhere else in the world. And so if anybody's listening in France and has one of those and they want to send it to me, I'd be happy to accept it from you. Because this is one that I would like to add it to my collection of actual physical media.
I guess one of the producers of it was one of the producers on the American remake.
Okay, so. Yeah. Yeah, I think I remember reading that somewhere.
What's interesting about it is that, like, you know, for those that are not from America or not really aware, you know, we do get, you know, foreign movies in the U.S., right? I don't know if this got much of a release here, but generally the ones that get released are kind of your art house, very dramatic kind of ones that are going for like the Oscar for best foreign film or the British, right? You know, it's already English, right? Like Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Covered, right? Like that was released in the States like 4 or 5 months after it had its British release, right? Or Love Actually, the Monty Python movies, you know, other examples. So. But yeah, so, you know, it'd be interesting to watch the original to see how it's different.
Yeah, it would.
I'm glad they were, you know, it sounds like they had a director in mind, but Cheyenne Hayter, who, not someone I was very familiar with, right? You know, and she did made a few films before, but I think, well, you know, you can tell, like, she kind of dove into kind of the world and kind of set it up, like, it, you know, it takes place in Gloucester, Massachusetts, right? So it's a fishing village, essentially, right? And the families, they're fishermen, right? So that she kind of got involved both within that world, but then also kind of the world of, like, the deaf community.
Yeah, so...
And the whole premise, you know, it never feels like it's a gimmick. Like, you know, it's obviously a catalyst for the story, but it's never a gimmick.
Yeah, so the premise is this girl, Ruby Rossi, is the only member of her family who can hear. Her parents and her brother are all deaf.
Right.
And Ruby is played by Emelie Jones, who, those of you who have been listening to the podcast for a while know that I like to play a little game that I'm right now just going to dub the Who's Who of Doctor Who.
Yep.
And I like to point out actors and actresses who have been featured in Doctor Who over the years.
She's one of them.
She was in an episode of Doctor Who. Emelie Jones played Mary Galel in the season 7 or series 7 episode, yes, The Rings of Akatan, with Matt Smith as the 11th Doctor, back when she was a kid. Back when Emelie Jones was a kid, was a little kid.
Probably about 10 when she did that, filmed that. So.
Yeah, and she sang in that too.
Yeah.
So.
She also sang in the Shrek musical.
Did she?
She's got. Yeah, she was young Fiona in, like, I guess the original stage production over in London.
Okay.
But yeah, no, she's got some pipes.
Yeah. Yeah, she's definitely
good,
got a
good
fantastic
actress,
voice.
Good singer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Ruby's family is, like you said, fishermen. They've got a fishing boat. They go out every day, every morning, and bring back fish before she goes out to school, because she is in her senior year of high school.
Yeah, she gets up like at 3 a.m. every day. They fish because, you know, fishermen, they're out on the sea early. And then she goes to school and she falls asleep in class sometimes.
Yes. And right? What, you know, she loves doing when they're fishing is she's got a little boombox out there and she'll play music and she'll sing while she's cleaning the fish and all that stuff. Yeah. So
it's obviously
her dad and her brother don't really mind because, you know, they can't hear the music. But so she can kind of play it as loud as she wants. But yeah, she loves singing. She doesn't know if she's any good because nobody's been able to tell her.
Yeah, because when she sings at the house or the shower, right?
Yeah. Then, and she's always been sort of bullied at school because she's the only person that can hear in her family. So she doesn't really know how to connect with people that don't use sign language or don't, you know.
Right.
But and back in
a lot
her,
of time having to translate for her parents.
Yeah. And back when she was little, when she first started going to school with everybody, she got made fun of because she sounded different, because she would talk. Like, you know, a lot of deaf people talk, you know, she would sound like she was deaf because she was taught to talk by her parents.
Right. Yeah. So no, exactly. And that's kind of like a little detail kind of thought about, you know, watching it and they touch it and just kind of, I guess, people that are CODAs, like, you know, especially if they don't have like other family close by to be able to help develop that language and how that happens. You know, it's kind of a fascinating thing to think about.
Yeah. But she does have one friend, Gertie. Her best friend,
yes.
Who, so one day they're going, she and Gertie are signing up for extracurricular clubs at school to try to get their extracurriculars up because they were getting close to graduating.
It's look good. Yeah.
And there's this boy that Ruby sort of has a crush on. And so she's sort of listening to what clubs he joins. And he goes up, signs up for choir. And so Ruby, right away, she wants to sign up for choir. Gertie doesn't understand why, because she'd never known that Ruby likes to sing. And, of course, Ruby, being a teenage girl, is trying to hide the fact that she's got a crush on this boy. And that's why she's wanting to do it. She just tells her that she loves singing. She sings all the time. So Gertie reluctantly signs up for choir with her. Which, did we ever see Gertie in that class?
I don't think so.
I don't remember seeing her in there either. But they both signed up for it.
Teacher probably kicked her out.
Both signed up for it. Maybe she was there like the first day. But after that, I don't remember seeing her.
We'll get into Mr. V.
Yeah. Mr. V.
Out.
Yep. But so set up for choir. She shows up to the first day of it. And, you know, this boy, Miles, that she's got a crush on, is there. And everybody is supposed to sing Happy Birthday because it was just recently Bernardo Villalobos the teacher, it was recently his birthday. And so he was very strict on, if you cannot roll your R's, just call me Mr. V. My name is Bernardo Villalobos. And if you cannot roll your R's, just call me Mr. V. So everybody's calling him Mr. V. But he's an interesting character.
I mean, they're in a high school, a fishing town off Massachusetts, right? You know.
Yeah. And lots, here's this. Here's this, you know, Hispanic teacher in Gloucester, Massachusetts, that, you know, he's got a strong accent. But anyway, so he wants everybody to just sing happy birthday to him, you know, so he could see how they sound and so he could determine what range they sing in and all that. So it gets to Ruby and she gets stage fright.
Yep.
You know, she sort of just runs out of the room and, you know, the class goes on without her. But then she runs off to a nearby lake in the woods, sort of off by herself, sits on a rock and starts singing happy birthday.
Yeah. She does it very well.
Yes, she does. And so it's understandable. I mean, because she's never sung in front of people before. She doesn't know if she's any good.
She doesn't want to embarrass herself in front of her crush.
She's been bullied her whole life. She's been made fun of for having a deaf family her whole life. And so I completely understand how she could be, you know, get stage fright like that. I mean, I don't have any deaf family members, but I was always the kid in school that, you know, I've had my share of being bullied in my life. No, so I can understand where she's coming from there.
Try to avoid any situation where that might happen.
Yeah. So she doesn't tell her parents right away. She doesn't tell her family at all that she joined choir for a while.
Yeah, no.
But, you know, I think it's the next day she ends up going in and talking to Mr. V, apologizing for running out of class. And he asks her why he should keep her in his class. So she explains to him that she loves singing. She doesn't so far go into saying it, but she needs a place to belong.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so he asks her to sing for him. And so she does, after he explains to her about what David Bowie said about Bob Dylan. How Bob Dylan is like sandpaper.
Not wrong.
Yeah. But yeah, so she sings for Mr. V, and his response is, well, it's not sandpaper. So yeah, then you know, he gives her the nickname Bob. But yeah, so he accepts her back into the class and she shows up every time. And as the classes go on, she gets a little more comfortable singing in front of everybody until, you know, one day when they're trying to get ready for the concert that's coming up, the fall concert, and she is selected to be in the duet with Miles. So, you know, they're given their music, they're given what song they're supposed to sing. And meanwhile, this whole time she's, again, her family's a bunch of fishermen. So she's going out every morning on the boat, fishing, being an interpreter for her family, because everybody else who's in that harbor, they're all hearing. So, and none of them speak sign language. None of them use sign language.
They're also kind of feeling the crunch, right? You know, economically, financially, right? Because they're getting new fees and there's disagreement about should they be getting more.
Yeah, the co-op that they work under, the people that they sell all their fish to, are starting to charge them more for operating and paying them less for the fish.
Right. So you have a few scenes on the docks where it's kind of a contention that there's a whole town hall type meeting of everyone in the co-op. And you know, the brother, he's kind of wanting to be the person himself to, like, he believe, you know, he's not much older than Ruby, but
yeah, he's a couple years older, but he's in his early 20s
in this line of being a fisherman, and he can't speak, but he wants to be able to show he can kind of provide for the family also in a certain way.
Yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, he seems to be kind of jealous of Ruby because she can communicate with everybody, whether it's their family or everybody else, and he can't do that. But at the same time, he's very supportive of Ruby.
Yes.
You know, he wants her to be able to do her own thing. He wants her to be able to get away from all this pressure that has been placed on her. And he wants to be able to be that person that can basically take her place in the family so that she can go and do her thing. So she can, right. She can live her life and do what she wants to do.
He's confident enough in himself that he has what it takes to kind of help lead the family with business. But he doesn't feel like he gets that chance, right? Because, you know, they rely on Ruby to kind of be that person to communicate everything for them. But they're in one of the board meetings is when her dad decides that, you know, to form their own co-op. And they get a bunch of people to kind of join them, right?
Yeah.
And I kind of forgot about the scene, too, when beginning with the doctors.
Yes. So, yeah. So, yes, the doctor scene. So they're at the doctor's because both of Ruby's parents, they've both got
issues below the belt.
Yes, they've got issues below the belt. So Frank and Jackie, they're both itching a lot and redness and all that down in their bathing suit areas. And so Ruby is there interpreting because the doctor doesn't use sign language. And so,
this is one of those tiny little things you need to think about. If you're like the person that's doing the communicating, it's your parents.
Yeah.
You have to do some of these really awkward conversations.
Yeah. And so she's interpreting and everything for them. And basically, the doctor says that they have jock itch,
yeah.
Which is created by, you know, wet
a lot of friction.
Clothing, friction against wet clothing and, you know, stuff like that, which is life on a boat. And it can be passed on to someone else, which is how Jackie, Ruby's mom, got it. So,
because, you know, they love each other.
They're horn dogs. But
because when they're told that, you know, no hanky panky.
So
for what, like 14 days.
The funny thing there is, so the doctor says, you know, no sex for 2 weeks. And Ruby tells her parents, no sex ever. You can never do it again.
That's true.
And then when her dad's about to blow up, he's like, no, 2 weeks, 2 weeks. He said 2 weeks. It's just a very funny scene. Awkward for everybody involved, like, and just funny.
Troy Kotzer, the dad, he's terrific at, you know.
Yeah. He's actually he's the one that won Best Supporting Actor.
Yes,
for this movie.
The actors in this, her family, they're all, you know, deaf. Who played the brother?
The brother was Daniel Durant.
Daniel Durant, and then Marlee Matlin is the mom, and Marlee Matlin is actually an Oscar winner. Also, she was the first person that deaf that won an Oscar for Children of a Lesser God. She's actually the youngest Best Actress winner in the history of the Oscars.
Oh. Really?
But she hasn't done a lot of film.
Did not know that.
She was like 21 when she won the Oscar for that, like the mid-80s.
Yeah, and I first saw her in an episode of My Name is Earl.
Yeah.
She played a lawyer in My Name is Earl.
She might be, for a lot of people, she might not be a name, you know, but like you would probably recognize her because she does a lot of guest TV spots.
Yeah.
She was in an episode of Seinfeld and I think ER, The West Wing also. So
yeah, so
she's kind of the recognizable face. Yeah.
Of the main characters of the movie, Ruby and her family, she's probably the one that would be most recognizable to most people.
Yeah. I guess, you know, Amelia Jones to a certain extent also because of Lock and Key.
Yeah, true.
So I'm kind of thinking the bigger picture, I guess, going further back. But yeah, her parents are really funny together.
Yeah.
they feel like an actual married couple.
They do. So. They really do. Yeah. So then after all this doctor stuff... Ruby is in her choir class, and after class, her and Miles are called over to the piano where Mr. V is to practice their duet.
They're nervous about it.
They're nervous about it. They've, you know, he asked if they practiced, and they're like, yeah, we practiced, just not with each other. So he has them sing to each other, so that it's kind of awkward for them because they hadn't done that yet. And at the end of their little practice session, Miles leaves and Ruby is told to stick around for a minute. Well, Mr. V tells her that he's been working with Miles on an audition for the Berklee School of Music in Boston.
Yep.
And he encourages Ruby to let him work with her so that she can audition too, because right. He sees something in her. He sees talent. He sees just a good person that he wants to help.
Yeah. He's be the good teacher.
Yeah. And so, you know, she reluctantly agrees because, again, she doesn't. I mean, she has Mr. V's opinion of her singing ability, which, you know, he thinks she's a good singer. But that's she still doesn't know how good she actually is because she's never had somebody close to her tell her that she is good.
Right. Yeah. It's not like she's had anyone in the family. Like, you don't see, doesn't appear there's any other close family that lived by. And
but here's something that really, like, an aspect of this that I loved was it was actually earlier in when she came in to apologize for running out of the first class before Mr. V agreed to let her continue with the class was he asked her how she feels when she sings.
Yes.
And she had no words. She could not express it in words. So she used sign language.
Yep.
And even if you don't know sign language, just watching the signs that she was doing, you could infer just from watching what she was saying.
Right.
And it's just the honesty in that response to Mr. V, you know, that, you know, a lot of high schoolers might try to, you know, just make up something that wouldn't make them sound quite so vulnerable.
Yeah.
But she was honest with him, you know.
Uh-huh.
Explaining to him, you know, through sign language, what singing made her feel like. Like butterflies in her stomach, and then like she's floating, and, you know, that kind of thing. And that's what made him, because he could tell that she had a passion for it.
Right.
And that's what...
It transformed her in a certain way.
Yeah.
She acts it really well, because, I mean, I would imagine, like, from what I've seen, like, she would not know an American Sign Language prior to the movie, and she puts that part of her, like, so naturally into what she's just kind of... It's like, nothing awkward about it, so...
No, yeah. And, yeah, so that's what ultimately made Mr. V decide to keep her in class. So then he offers to help train her for a Berklee audition.
Right. Because she has no actual singing training either. She has a great voice.
Yeah.
To be able to train and know.
Yeah, she has a great voice, but it's sloppy at that point because she's never trained it. So she agrees to meet with him on nights and weekends to train for the audition, which just adds even more to her plate because she's still dealing with all the fishing stuff. She's dealing with interpreting for her family. She's the go-to person for everybody in her family for everything.
Yeah. But, you know, she's willing to try it. And so they do the agreement.
So Ruby is dealing with all this extra stuff on her plate that a normal high school girl would never have to deal with.
Right.
And then on top of that, she's taking on this Berklee School of Music audition. And, you know, while also practicing the choir concert and dealing with typical teenage hardships, you know, like her parents picking her up from school while her dad's listening to gangster rap in the truck.
So, right.
Embarrassing her.
I was going to bring this up earlier, right? So like they don't hear the music on the boat, but he can feel the vibration. Yes,
he loves the vibrations, which is why he likes listening to gangster rap, because it's nice and bass and there's a lot of vibrations there.
They have it on very loud because...
Yeah, the louder it is, the more vibrations.
The bigger the bass, you understand. Anyway, yeah,
so...
And then, you know, she's also, you know, she's practicing, you know, for the choir.
And then also she's dealing with stuff with her friend, like Gertie, who has a big crush on Leo, her brother, on Ruby's brother. Which is a real funny scene there where they're in Ruby's bedroom and Gertie is talking about Leo and she's asking her to tell her how to say that she wants to jump his bones. How to tell him that
she goes to leave the house and he's down there watching TV on the couch.
And she makes some gestures. She signs something and then walks off with Ruby a big smile on her face.
And Leo says, like, why did she tell me she has herpes? Or, you know, when Brady comes over, they're practicing over the room and all of a sudden they hear a lot of loud noises.
When Miles comes over. Yeah.
Yeah, Miles, sorry.
And they're practicing for their song. And they hear loud noises coming from the room next door.
Because they don't know that she has someone next door. They can't hear that, right?
No.
And they are very loud.
Yes, they are very loud. And we find out shortly after that it has not been 2 weeks yet.
Yes.
Since the doctor visit. So,
the awkward thing there where now the four of them are just sitting on the couch.
The parents and Ruby and Miles are all sitting in the living room being super awkward.
And then her dad starts talking about making sure that they use condoms.
Yes, making sure that Ruby and Miles
because
use protection, and that Miles puts a helmet on that soldier.
You know, because I guess he was assuming he was over there for that as well.
Yep.
You know, which he wasn't.
Which, I mean, I can't remember at this point. Had Ruby told her mom that she had joined choir yet?
They had talked about it, okay. I believe. Yeah,
there was one time at the dinner table.
Her mom just did. Yeah. The thing is, like, they have trouble understanding why she wants to do that.
Yeah.
And to them, it seems, I guess it feels like it's maybe a bit of a rebellion. There's this thing about, see, like, it's, I think she makes it a kid, like, if we were blind, we'd want to paint.
Yeah.
Right? Something for them. Yeah, it's hard to grasp. But there's a beautiful moment later that we can talk about with, between her and her mom also.
Yeah, right before the concert.
Yeah.
But yeah.
When she comes in with the dress for the concert. I think they are aware at that point, but they're not really aware. I don't know if they're aware she's taking the lessons.
Yeah, I don't think they know about that yet. Yeah.
They know she's going to do the concert. That's the school concert. So.
Yeah, so the next day at school, in the lunch line, some of the other girls that were some of the bigger bullies for Ruby start making sex noises like her parents were making. And revealing that Miles told somebody about what happened.
You know how things go at school. You tell one person, they tell somebody else.
Yeah. And so she got
mad. This is embarrassing.
Yeah. So it's embarrassing Ruby. And then she goes and talks to Miles and, you know, basically pissed off at Miles for telling everybody about what went on. And he assured her he only told one person. He told his one friend. And, you know, just like high school, it blows up after you tell one person. And, you know, he right away starts trying to apologize, but she won't have it, which understandably so.
Yeah. Understandable. And you look at him, you can tell he's definitely sorry about
yeah.
it. You know, he realizes he messed up.
Like, he didn't.
He's a very likable person. Yeah. He's very likable.
He is. He didn't do any of this in malice. He didn't tell his friend. He told his friend because it was funny.
But,
you know. The situation was funny. He wasn't trying to. He wasn't trying to make fun of her family or anything like that. He was relaying the hilarity of the situation and just didn't think it through.
Yeah. So now, you know, she's kind of dealing with the whole stress of doing the practices and the concert, but also the increased demands on her family because they've started the co-op, which seems to be doing really well. You know, there's a lot of sequences and it attracts enough attention for there to be a new spot on it, right? Which don't really tell her until
so right late. Before it happens.
Again, they don't know that she has the practices, and she keeps missing the practice. You know, keeps being late to practices.
Yeah, because she has to deal with stuff for her family, for the co-op, and
right.
And then this, the news broadcast comes on, and they're going to interview the family, and they need her to be there to interpret. And they don't tell her until minutes before the cameras show up, and she's on her way out the door to go to her practice with Mr. V. And so they convince her to stay and do the interviews because she really doesn't have a choice.
Yes.
She's the only one that can interpret. So, you know, afterwards she goes to try to talk to Mr. V, and he's upset because his time is very precious to him. And if he is...
he's got a family also.
Yeah, he's got a family and...
young kids, so, which I get.
Yeah, and his time is very precious to him. And if you waste his time, he doesn't want to deal with you. You know, he sets time aside to help these kids, and if they don't want his help, then you know he'll send them on their way.
Which I get what he's saying. He probably could have been a little bit more empathetic.
He could have
the situation,
but also, I mean, she never really told him the extent of it, though.
Right? No, she never did.
So I mean, yeah, he understood that she's her family's interpreter and everything. She's so important in the goings on of her family's daily life.
Yeah.
But I don't know that she ever really revealed to him the extent of what she does for her family.
Yeah.
So, you know, Mr. V's upset with her and basically tells her to stop coming to practice. Tells her that he's not going to help her anymore because she can't balance everything and she's always late. So, you know, that upsets her. But, yeah, I think other movies might try to create a little bit more drama there. But I like that this one didn't.
Yes.
You know, like what you were saying about this earlier, about this movie being a more realistic view of family life. You know, it doesn't go to the extreme either way, like a lot of other movies, especially coming of age movies would do.
Yeah. But by the way, thinking about the family life, I want to mention this when Miles was over. I love the house.
Yeah.
That they.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I looked into it like, you know, it was actually, you know, they found a house near a location and the family agreed to let them film in it. Right.
Yeah.
It feels like what a house for a fisherman would be. Right.
It really does. I mean, it's not a big house.
It's not that they're poor and impoverished, but, you know, just working class people with a smallish house. But, like, it feels super lived in. I get someone's house. But, yeah, like, I mean, they obviously did their own set design for it.
Yeah, it's not a big house, but it's open.
Yeah.
And I
like the slanted roofs and the bedrooms upstairs, mm-hmm. right? You know, it's got that feel to it.
Yeah. And the kitchen table is essentially...
yard, but it's because, like, those boats that... Yeah. The fisherman that owed would have the yard.
Yeah, right? And their dining table is basically a picnic table that's out on the screened-in porch.
Yeah.
But
Mr. B, he's like, yeah, no. And, you know, it's understandable. But so, you know, she's kind of distraught by this. And you know, Miles one night just texts her, like, you know, what do I have to do? Right? Yeah. You know, he's being persistent.
Yeah, what can I do to make it up to you for what I did? You know, for telling my friend about what happened. And so and what we also didn't explain before we get into this. So they've been required to have an observer on all the boats to make sure that everything is going according to the rules and the laws of the sea and all that.
Yeah. Which, you know, makes sense. You know, there's always inspections.
Yeah. So there's supposed to be an observer coming on doing an inspection at some point in time on the boat. And so when Miles texts Ruby, she tells him that he can make it up to her by meeting her at the lake where she was earlier, where her little secret spot where she goes, you know, out in the woods.
There's always a lake for teenagers to jump into.
Yeah. And it's always like a really nice lake, too.
Yeah. We didn't have that.
No, we didn't.
I mean, we grew up in a nice suburb. And we didn't have that. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, the best I had growing up there was a creek not too far away.
the Lake Way Sugar Land where there were tires.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I guess we had some parks.
I mean, like the Potomac River was like right there, but like there was no place to like jump into it.
No, there wasn't.
We did have nice parks. That's true.
We had some nice parks. We had Algonquin Park and the park over by Nova and stuff like that. So at least I had those nice little areas. But yeah, no big fancy lakes with cliffs and whatnot. but
jump off and they got with each other.
Yeah. So Ruby decides to.
So we know about the observer.
Yeah.
They're setting up this time to be with each other.
But did they ever actually tell them when the observer was coming on, or was it supposed to be a surprise thing?
No, I think the idea is that it's supposed to be like a surprise.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a surprise because they're not supposed to be able to, you know, prepare for it. It's just the observer's supposed to go on there and they're supposed to do their job and, you know, do their fishing. But anyway, so Ruby decides she's going to not go on the boat the next day so that she can go and meet up with Miles at the lake.
The day of Miles.
Well, so apparently she told her dad about it because the conversation that he had with Jackie later sounds like he knew that she wasn't going to be going.
Yes.
So that just happens to be the day that the observer is going on the boat.
Yeah. We see Frank and Leo there. They're loading up the boat. And then this woman comes in and she says she's observing. And she doesn't know they're deaf.
No, she doesn't know they're deaf. So, you know, Leo lets her on the boat.
Like, they are able to pick up enough of the language, just, you know, her body language.
And they can read lips to a certain,
too, that, you know, why she's there. And then she's got luggage and they help her, you know, get the stuff all into the boat. And they go.
And while they're out, the engine's running real loud.
Yes.
And, you know, they obviously can't hear it, but she's wondering why it's so loud. And so she's trying to ask Frank why the engine's so loud. Is it supposed to be that loud? Is it, you know, and... You know, most of the things that she's saying, they're not really responding because they're busy doing other stuff. You know, they got their backs turned to her and they're, you know, cleaning fish and getting their lines all organized and everything. They're doing their fishing.
They're the process, yeah.
And so eventually, you know, Frank comes over to her and takes her little notebook and writes deaf.
Yeah.
On there. So, and she understands both of them are deaf. They're not answering her because they can't hear her. So she pulls out her phone and she calls the Coast Guard. And so when the Coast Guard comes up, nobody's there to answer the radio because nobody can hear them calling on the radio except the observer, which I guess she's not allowed to answer the radio when the Coast Guard's calling. So they end up getting a huge fine. And did they? Because they mentioned getting a license suspended. But then when they're sort of on somewhat of a trial at the end of that, it doesn't seem like the license is actually suspended.
I think it's kind of a conditional that they have an interpreter on board at all times.
They must always have at least one hearing person on the boat at all times. Somebody who can interpret, answer the radio.
Also be able to hear radio. Yeah. And, like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're at home, like, the night after this. And,
which, I mean, then ends up, you know, putting a whole lot more pressure on Ruby.
Right.
Because now she is even more obligated to do this.
Because they're talking about, like, how wondering why Ruby wasn't on the boat. And she's saying, like, you know, why is this my fault? I can't always interpret. Which is, like, true. Like, she has a point, and you can understand the parents' frustration as well. Like, this gets back to what we talked about. Like, the drama within the family is very real. Yeah. You know? But you still kind of feel within all that, like, the love that's at the center of the family. That they love each other.
Yeah. And by the way, real quick, in case people are wondering, the whole lake stuff with Miles. Basically, Ruby and Miles had a fun day at the lake and ended up...
shared their first kiss.
Yes, shared their first kiss and became a couple at the lake.
Yes.
But anyway, that's really the major points of the lake portion.
Yes.
That's where, you know, they made up and they, you know, she forgave him for telling people about her parents. So now they're boyfriend and girlfriend. Yeah, so now Ruby's got all this extra pressure because now that, you know, they don't have money to pay these fines. Because if they can't fish, they won't have the money to pay.
Right.
Because the only income they have is from fishing.
And then they would need, you know, they would have to try to find an interpreter and probably pay an interpreter.
Yeah.
You know, if Ruby doesn't do it. So
whereas Ruby, being situation. Their kid, works for free as an interpreter.
I put a loop over your head.
Yeah.
Right. So she decides that she's not going to go to college. At some point, she had told him about
Berkeley.
But then she decides, there's actually a thing about that. There is that conversation between her parents, though, before they go to bed one night.
Yeah.
And they're just going to talk about, like, why does she want to do this? And
yeah, why does she want to go to college? Why does she want to leave us? You know, and the dad, her dad, Frank, he's very understanding. He wants the best for her.
Yes.
He tries to explain to Jackie that they need to find somebody else to interpret so that Ruby can go to school, so that she can have a life outside of what they're forcing upon her.
I like too the scene because, like, you know, she wants to keep talking. It breaks like no.
I'm tired. I want to go to bed. But I mean, you could tell. You could tell all that. That, I mean, Jackie's not a bad mom. She's not. She does really well. She does, and she doesn't understand the extent of what Ruby is being forced into.
Yes.
You know, she also doesn't trust other people to be the interpreter for them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not that she doesn't want Ruby to have a good life and to go to college and to make friends and be the best person that she can be. It's more of, you know, she needs the comfort of what she's used to.
Yes.
She needs the person that she can trust to be what her family needs her to be.
Which, you know, as a mother, I'm sure it's kind of a scary thing, you know, especially if you have such a handicap and need some sort of stability there to know that the family is protected in a way, right? It's a very motherly instinct. So,
yeah.
But she then announces that she's going to not go to college and stay with the family business, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, her parents are supportive. But then, you know, Leo.
Yeah, Leo just blows up.
You know, and he runs off and then she finds him and they have an argument. And, you know, this whole idea is that, you know, you will regret not going to college. You can't stay with us forever.
I mean, it starts out, the whole thing starts out, it seems like he's mad at her because she's taking over, you know, everything that he's trying to do. But no, the deep down, it's really he's upset because she's giving up her life. She's giving up the life that she's worked for. That she's trying to get, and he doesn't want her to do that. He wants her to go and do what she wants to do. He doesn't want her to be tied down with the family drama, with the fishing, because he knows that that's not what she wants.
Yeah. You know, the way he puts it is that, you know, we were able to do it fine before you were born, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's not saying in a way like, you know, I wish you were born. You know, he's saying like, we've done this. We can do this. And just so be here to help us with, you know, at other times as well. So.
Yeah. But, you know, she still feels this demand on her that she You know what I mean? And I get it. She feels needed.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is not a bad feeling to have.
It's not a bad feeling to have.
Especially if you have at a point where you had very few friends.
Yeah.
Right? And you've been made fun of. Like, being needed, you know, it's a natural thing. It's a comfort zone that you want to stay with it.
Yeah. And on top of that, she knows that her family needs her, and she wants to be there for them. She's not going to give up on her family, no matter how much she wants to go to music school, no matter how much she wants to go to college in general. She's not going to turn her back on her family. So she and Leo have this argument about her future. And then, I guess if we missed the... Yeah, so we neglected to talk about the bar scene earlier.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, where... After coming back from fishing one day, a bunch of the guys at the docks were going to get a beer afterwards. And so Leo joined them, and somebody bumped into him, spilled his beer on himself. And so he got up to go talk to the guy and ended up getting a fight with him. But but then it turns out that Gertie works at the bar.
Yep.
And she's, you know, in high school, not old enough to be behind a bar, but she's working at the bar, and they end up hooking up. In the broom closet. Yep.
Is she 18?
I would hope so. Otherwise, he's got a whole mess of problems coming his way.
It's not aggravated assault. But they hook up and they kind of end up maintaining a relationship.
Yeah.
And she ends up telling her brother that, yeah, she's got a really good voice. Ruby's got a really good voice.
Yeah.
That she loves music. So, like, they kind of, like, this outside person be able to kind of communicate that to someone else within the family.
Yes, which is very important. So, yeah, the night before the concert.
And the concert's the day before what would be the, rehearsal or audition, I should say.
That's right, it is, isn't it? It is the day before, isn't it? So, yeah, so the night before the concert.
She hasn't really been...
Ruby's in her room, and her mom comes in
with a red dress.
With a package. Tells her that she bought something for her. She bought her a red dress that she can wear for it, but if she doesn't like it, she doesn't have to wear it. To sort of try to make amends for her attitude lately toward Ruby singing and her everything. And that's when Ruby just flat out asks her if she wished that she was deaf.
Right.
And so Jackie tells her, when you were born, I prayed that you would be deaf.
Right.
But when they put all the electrodes on your head and... that showed that you were able to hear.
Hear.
Then she was upset because she was afraid that having a daughter who could hear when she, the mother, could not hear, that they would never be able to connect and she would be a bad mother.
Yep.
And so that's where all of, you know, these disagreements they've had, especially recently, stemmed from. So, you know, they have their little touching moment and, you know, Ruby jokes that she's not
a bad
mother
because for so many other reasons.
You're not a bad mother because you're deaf, because you're deaf. You're a bad mother for so many other reasons. And then they both have a laugh and.
Yeah. You know, it's a good tender moment.
Yeah.
Between mother and daughter.
Yeah. So the next day at the concert, Ruby's wearing the red dress that her mother got her. And they're getting set up to go on stage. Meanwhile, the family is getting their seats in the audience and they're all kind of just sitting there not knowing what to do. Because they're at a choir concert and they can't hear what is being sung. So, but luckily Leo brought Gertie with him. And so when the class gets out on stage and Ruby starts singing, then Gertie reassures them that she can sing.
Yeah.
That Ruby sounds good. And so Leo passes that on to his parents. And
at this point, it's the entire choir right now. It's not the duet.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
they're just kind of looking around and trying to see how people are reacting. And
I love how, especially during the duet part, that maybe I should wait another minute before going into this, but how all the audio just goes quiet.
Yes.
And we're experiencing it as they are.
As they experience it, yes.
Where they're just looking around, seeing people's reactions, not being able to hear the music being sung.
Yep.
And it's just, I thought that was a very nice touch.
Yeah. Especially for the, when you go into the duet, they just start seeing, there's people kind of crying about it.
Yeah. You can tell they're touching people, and they can sort of just tell from that it reassures them that Ruby's good.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they get through the concert, they get back home.
Well, see,
the whole time, yes, they do. Yeah. First. So during the concert, Frank, the dad, is he's looking at paying real close attention to everybody.
Yeah.
And he's very concerned about all this, whereas Jackie is sort of just there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so after the concert, they're walking out into the lobby. Or before the duet starts, first off, Mr. V comes out on stage and he's talking to everybody. And he's like, sometimes in life, you just find a voice that's unlike any other.
That's right.
And introduces the duet. Introduces Ruby and Miles. Then they go into their duet. Frank and Jackie are looking around. Then after the concert's over, they're out in the lobby. They run into Mr. V and his family.
Yeah.
And he you got to give him credit. You got to give Mr. V credit. He tried to learn sign language. He tries to, Ruby introduces him to her parents and he tries to sign nice to meet you, but ends up signing nice to fuck you. And then Ruby just looks embarrassed and tells him what he said. He's like, oh, I thought I said nice to meet you. And but actually, before Ruby could say what he said, then Frank chimes in. He's like, it's okay. I get it. It's nice to screw you, too. And they all have a laugh about it. But Mr. V tells Ruby that he really wishes that she would audition.
Do the audition. Yep. So they go home and...
So Jackie and Leo go inside, and Ruby's about to go inside with him, but Frank wants some air. Out. So he's going to stay out, yep. Get some air.
She stays.
And Ruby he's stops and she comes back out. Yes.
Yeah. Right? He's, which I appreciate. I love looking at the stars.
So do I.
You know, he's just talking about how
the stars
are different there than when he's out on his boat.
Yeah, he loves the stars on the boat. You know, they look so much better out in the water than they do in the city or in their little fisherman's town. But then he asked her what the song that she was singing was about, what the duet was about. And so she told him, you know, it's about because it was You're All I Need to Get By was the song. And so she explained to him that, you know, it's about needing someone. And he asked her to sing it. And this is one of those times. This is one of those parts of the movie that hit me like a freight train.
The incredibly well
it was done. Yeah, so this is one of those movies that
went to the Oscars
brought more probably. Than just a tear to my eye. It yeah, I'm not ashamed to say there were the waterworks got turned on.
The onions are being sliced.
Yeah, so she starts singing and he sort of moves his hands up, puts them over her neck cords. Over her vocal cords, so he can feel the vibrations coming off of her vocal cords. And just his reaction to that is where it just, really hits you.
It's probably what won him the Oscars, this scene right here. I mean, he's great in all of it. But this scene, he just
shows so much vulnerability, shows so much love, shows just everything. He portrays it so well in this scene. And it's just a powerful scene in general.
Yep.
So you know, he starts crying. Yeah. She starts crying. And
It's a really good contrast, too, because like you had the scene with the mom before the concert and the scene after with the dad. You know, it just shows the different relationship a girl has with a mom and a girl has with a dad, right?
Yeah.
They balance it well. They hit the notes perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a really emotional, powerful scene.
So, yeah, so the next day, she gets up. She's getting ready to go on the boat, and her parents tell her, we're not going. We're not going on the boat.
Boston.
We're going to Boston so you can go to your audition. And so, you know, she gets ready real quick. They get in the car. She texts Mr. V, tells him that she's on her way.
Yep.
And you know, he's like, hurry, there's still time for you to make it. Miles is in there now. You still have some time, so get here. And they get there, and Miles had just finished up his audition, and he choked.
He says he bombed it.
He said he bombed it. He choked. He lost out on it. And so she's up. So she...
And her parents want to go away, but they say...
Yeah. They say no, they're not just allowed.
The audition. Yeah, it's just
the person auditioning is allowed in there. Family's not allowed in. So they're, you know, forced to stay out in the lobby.
And Mr. B looks like he's already left as well.
Yeah.
So she missed him.
Yeah. So she's sort of just going in there by herself.
She has sheet music and she's like, no, she's got to do it.
She's like, I accidentally left it at home. And so they're like, okay. So they asked the piano player if she knew the song. The song was Both Sides Now by Jody Mitchell. And the piano player didn't know it. And so
you can tell that she's getting more and more nervous because she, you know, she's late. She doesn't have the music. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have her teacher. And, she didn't,
and
she,
her family can't be there.
Miles, you know, yeah. He choked. And then her parents can't be there. So it's the whole combination of things that obviously.
So you could tell she's, you know, real nervous. Doesn't think that she can go through with it. Meanwhile, you know, her parents are out in the lobby. Her dad's like, hey, maybe we can sneak upstairs.
Yeah, he sees the
door to the stairway. Yeah. So
no one's watching.
So, you know, they tell Ruby that she's going to have to sing it a cappella. And then before she can start, Mr. V comes in from the back.
Yeah, he's a class of 89.
He's like, Bernardo Villalobos, class of 89. I've been working with Ruby. I know the song. Do you mind if I be the accompanist?
Yep.
And so they give him the okay. So he goes, sits down at the piano, starts playing. She starts singing. But Mr. V can tell that she's not putting everything into it, that there's nerves that are coming out.
Yep. And so he messes up.
Yes.
He misses a note.
So he purposely misses a note very badly, apologizes to the panel that's listening, saying that it's his fault, not hers. Can we start from the top? So, you know, they're like, okay, fine. So he starts over. Meanwhile, Ruby's family sneaks into the balcony and they sit down. Yep. And she sees him walk up there. Start singing, and this is the other part of the movie that just got to me. There's another you know, waterworks scene where, you know, she's singing. I mean, first off, it's a beautiful song.
Yeah, she sings it beautifully.
She sings it beautifully. It's the lyrics are they fit perfectly with the story of the movie.
Correct.
They fit perfectly with Ruby. I connected with them. You know, it just everything lined up with this song. But she gets through the first verse, and when she starts getting into the chorus, because she realizes that her parents are watching, and they,
yeah,
especially from the night before with her dad outside, uh-huh, sitting on the back of the truck, you know, she wanted to share it with them. So as soon as she gets into the chorus, she starts signing, yeah, what she's singing so that they can sort of hear what she's singing so they can understand. And, you know, the judges are, they're looking confused. And one of them, yeah, sort of
somebody look up and see.
But yeah, so yeah. One of them looks up and sees the family sitting up there, but they don't say anything about it. They just let it happen. And so she is singing and signing for the entire song, and
yeah,
it's just a very beautiful scene. It's just,
it is.
It's incredibly well done. Toward the end of the song, it shows, you know, just a little montage of
things.
You know, they're out on the fishing boat again, and they're, you know, checking for the results of, you know, whether she got the scholarship or not. And all while you have Ruby singing,
yes,
you know, over this montage. And, you know, one of the parts of the montage, she's riding her bike up to Mr. V's house, knocks on his door, and he answers it, and she looks sad, like maybe she didn't get it. And then she looks happy. You know, they hug and congratulates her, and yep, you know, and then it shows her seeing the results of her family
the
online.
Computer, and they see the acceptance.
Yeah.
Yeah. They
they get excited.
Yeah.
But it's just a very beautifully done section of the movie. Very touching, very powerful.
Yep.
Then the final scene of the movie.
Well, they have, you know, she speaks with, you know, Miles before she, you know,
oh yeah,
she tells you the point where she's got to go off. She has a scene with Miles, bites her the boss. You know, it's really not that far. So.
Yeah.
We kind of hope they continue to butt up their romance.
Yeah. I mean, because right now the extent of their romance was at the lake.
Yeah.
You know? So it never really showed them dating or anything like that after,
nope,
after that. But yeah, so they meets up with Miles briefly before, you know, after finding out that she got in. And
you see some hearing workers are within the co-op that are learning sign language.
Yes.
Which, like, I mean, the co-op was... The one that they established was successful.
Yeah.
You could see, right? We talked about it. They had a
digital thing. I guess we also did see Ruby was teaching Miles sign language.
Yes.
So
there's people around. So they kind of established, yeah, there's kind of a connection there to be able to, people in the co-op and,
yeah,
you know, even Miles.
So it's never really made super clear if Ruby is teaching Miles sign language so that he can be their interpreter, the family's interpreter.
Oh, well, no, he's not.
But
he's
doubt that. It's just so that because, you know, they're dating. So
he wants
to be able to understand, you know, what her family's saying.
It's actually like a big deal.
Yeah.
And then that's, you know, the final scene of the house, and Gertie comes to pick her up and drive her off to Boston.
Yeah. And so she gets in the car and they start driving off, and she, you know, they get you know, half a block down the road or so, and tells Gertie to stop.
Go back, and they have a big family hug.
They have a big family hug, and a big Kodak moment. And then, you know, she gets back in the car, drives off, and then the final shot, you know, she sticks her head out the window and does the I love you sign to her parents before the credits roll.
Yep. That was, you know, Coda.
Yeah. The movie that...
Yeah, powerful movie.
Yeah, powerful movie that affected me more than I thought it would. But even, like, yeah, the first time I saw it, sure, there was a lot of ancillary stuff going on that may have had an effect on how I viewed the movie. But even just watching it the other day,
yeah,
you know, without all that extra stuff going on, it's still the same effect on me. So that just goes to show, yeah, it's a powerful movie. It is the best movie I've seen in a long time.
I could understand, why I won, various awards, especially, the Oscar. They get, best picture can go to a variety of different types of movies, but I think that this came out in like 2021, a movie that's, a little bit more uplifting after a couple of years of people being locked down and a lot of difficulties. Something that's, well, it's, emotional. It's ultimately a very kind of inspirational, powerful movie.
Yeah.
You kind of get why it won those awards. And even why, like, it's interesting. So, like, Sundance that year was completely virtual, right?
Yeah.
They didn't do it in person.
Yeah, because of COVID.
And then it got the release on, Apple TV picked it up, and it was released, like, in August of that year, a very limited theatrical run. I think it made, like, $2 billion, right? And it's a shame, because, like, it's a movie, I think, that could have... because it is so uplifted and familiar for a lot of people, it could have done really well at the box office in a normal year.
Yeah.
But it mostly just spent a few weeks at the theaters and then just stayed on Apple Plus, which is kind of unfortunate because Apple Plus doesn't quite get the viewers that, like, say, Netflix or, Prime does, right? But yeah, no, I thought it was very good. It's a worthy Oscar winner, in my opinion. And I thought that all three that won were very worthy of the wins.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And, it's interesting because we take a look at the others that, I guess, Frank Troy Kotsur, he's done a bunch of theater in his life, So, he's not really a stranger to acting.
Yeah.
I don't think he's done a whole lot of, like, film or television, all a lot of stage. So, but, he still had, like, comedic timing and just, again, the scene, when she's singing, Ruby's singing to him. Yeah, like, yeah, it's a...
It's a powerful scene.
It hits.
Yeah.
No matter what, even if a little more cynical about the entire movie, it may not be your favorite movie. I think it'd be hard pressed to say that scene doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how you'd be able to say that, my opinion. But so that's Coda.
That's Coda. So yeah, fantastic movie in my opinion. I definitely if you have gone through this entire episode and have not did not watch it before, even though we spoiled the crap out of it, do yourself a favor and watch it.
Yeah, no, it's the acting's good. The relationships are good. You'll enjoy it. And if you don't have Apple Plus, find someone who has Apple Plus. Get their login.
Yeah. Hopefully someday it'll actually get a wider release than just on Apple TV Plus. But
it deserves it.
I'm hoping that
movie that deserves to kind of get lost in the cracks.
Like, yeah.
I was thinking about this, to me, the more recent Best Picture winners, like The Artist, like, okay, yeah, no one really, I won, 12 years ago, and it's a movie that's barely thought about now.
Yeah. And really hoping that this one eventually gets, that Coda eventually gets a physical media release.
Definitely.
Because, like we were saying earlier, the only physical media release that it got was in France. It was not released anywhere else in the world except on streaming, except on digital. And people like me and like you love our physical media, like
physical stuff. And sometimes stuff gets taken off.
Yes, exactly.
Platforms,
exactly.
So,
but yeah, definitely.
Maybe if
definitely worth.
Or if you watch it on Apple Plus, maybe that we'll see.
But. Yeah. Maybe if enough people watch it, then they'll see that people love it.
Yep.
And they'll give it a little bit wider release than just on Apple TV Plus.
Maybe we'll get the Criterion Collection will save it. We'll see.
Maybe. but yeah. So anyway, yeah, if you want to find us on social media, things like that, we are on Facebook and Instagram It is Robin Tony's Cinematic Adventure, all spelled out. The and is spelled out, not an ampersand, even though the title of the podcast is with an ampersand, but ampersands don't work too well in handles for social media. So the and is spelled out on there, Robin Tony's Cinematic Adventure. We are also on Twitter or X, RNT Cinematic, and also on Letterboxd. That is Cine Adventure or Sign Adventure, however you want to pronounce it, C-I-N-E Adventure. And we're trying to get the threads going and stuff like that, too. Yeah. We're trying to get to as many of you as possible throughout the socials. If you want to send us an email, let us know what you think about the podcast. It's Rob and Tony's Cinematic Adventure at gmail.com.
Gmail. You also comment on anything as well.
Yes.
How about YouTube, like it? Whatever you want to do.
On YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you know, any of the other podcast apps you might like to listen to. We are on most of the major ones. So go ahead, go on your favorite podcast app, subscribe. Please listen to our podcast. Let us know what you think. Leave us a comment on social media, you know, give us a like and a follow and all of that. Because we want to be able to continue to bring you our movie discussions that we've always loved having with each other. And we want to share it with the world. And I hope that everyone finds what we have to say interesting. But if you don't, let us know. You know, let us know what you think.
How can we improve?
Yeah. How can we improve?
What movies do you want us to do?
Yeah. What movies do you want us to do? We have a list of movies that we want to do, but we want to know what you want us to do, too, so that we
can complete the list.
Yeah. So anyway, this is sort of a long winded way of saying check us out on our social media. But yeah. And join us next time. We will be doing Tremors.
Yes.
That classic Kevin Bacon, Fred Ward,
Reba McEntire,
Michael Gross, Michael Gross. Movie about subterranean classic worms.
B movie, like, well done, B movie.
Yes.
Universal monster movie. What do you want to call it?
A favorite of both of ours.
That has spawned a legion of really ridiculous sequels.
Yes.
But we'll talk about that next time.
Yep. Anyway, yeah, so join us next time for Tremors. I hope you enjoyed our review of Coda, and we will see you next time.
See you next time.